Have you ever felt like there's a bigger you that lives inside? Like you're more than one thing, but maybe you haven't given yourself permission to be your whole damn self. When we gather on Sexy Sunday, we're here to do that. I'm Bonnie, and I'm here for the taboo, the details of what makes you moan, and how we play with this experiment of life. Hello, loves. Welcome back to the podcast. It is my delight to bring you, and my pleasure to bring you, a guest today who does such fucking cool work. And it's kind of like those jobs where you're like, well, if that can be a job, like, that's a job? Like, I could do that and, like, just spend my days, like, helping people in that way. Yep, you can. My guest today is Tiffany Chambers Goldberg, and she is somebody who helps women tap into their sensuality to get strong, to ease pain, to improve range of motion and sensual self. This is somebody who is like, hey, what type of permission do you want to give yourself? And can I meet you in that? And it's a lot of work to be able to get to that, even just for yourself. And so to have somebody guide you who has gone through that process, who has done all of the things for the fitness world and has experienced and studied like all the things for years, like so many years. And then to say like, what about our sensuality? And you know, if you're here on the pod, you know that we get down and dirty. We like to talk about all the things. And if this is new to you on the podcast, I mean, there's zero limits here. We can get as detailed as we want, and we should, because we're more than one thing. And so today, this conversation with Tiffany, I am so grateful that you are here and for the ways that we're going to talk about shame and pleasure and pain and how to own the fuck out of our lives. So thank you for being here.
Oh, that was so good. All that. Thank you.
Oh my gosh. You're so welcome.
Yeah. And right away, I want to say, I have done all of these things for many, many years. And I'm not over the hump. Like, there's always so much more to learn and play with. And it took me a long time to arrive at the conversation around sensuality. And then once I actually did arrive, I was like, oh, that's what I was actually hunting the whole time. I thought I would find it in the yoga. I thought I would find it in my structural body work. I thought I would find, you know, and I have all these different pieces that contribute to the texture and the flavor of all of it. But sensuality is so big, and the patriarchal narrative is so insidious that there's just so much more. So I don't want to give the illusion of like, oh, I've got it all figured out.
I've arrived.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree with you. The minute that you learn something else or you lean somewhere else, the entire world opens up again and you're like, oh, there's more. The more that we understand, the more that we're like, oh, the more I have yet to learn. Or I don't know. I think, you know, does it also for you, does it also kind of become this experience where as you're leaning more into sensuality and helping guide others, that you are then paying attention to yourself and able to see places in yourself. You're like, oh, I thought that was a place that I had figured out, and that this leaning towards sensuality actually is a breaking open continually of spaces within yourself to explore.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I can only bring my students as far as I have journeyed. And so the more I get to play in that space, the more I get to expand. It's constantly an invitation to me to be able to start to move into those other places that seemed so big many, many years ago, you know, and now they're like, oh, it's a little less scary, a little less big. But
Yeah.
yeah.
I've been telling people since all my work in the yoga world, and I love this conversation about yoga and sensuality. I definitely want to go there. But people are like, well, who should I learn from? And in this like experience, with you and I here too, of like we're here for like to be real humans and talk about our story. And also like you do have something to offer for folks who might be listening, is that like I've been telling them that a teacher can only give what they have. So you're going to pick somebody to learn from anything. Any of us ever could do that. But a teacher can only give what they have. And I tell teachers, I'm like, just give what you know. Like, don't try to fake it in any other sort of way. Just be truly honest about what you have to give and then show up in that way. And then students can meet you. I'm like, okay, how do we flow?
And same with, I think referencing what I said earlier around like thinking that maybe you've arrived someplace. I think when you feel that way, you may become stagnant. And so for me personally, I mean, I just kind of brought up like, all right, who do I look for to as my teachers? I'm looking for the ones who are voracious, the ones who are constantly learning and not just settling into like, oh, I already know it all, because we are always evolving. I mean, who I am now, I'm just almost 48. Who I am now, like it's just constantly different iterations. And I'm so excited for my 50s where like more of the like I don't give a fuck comes in, and what how I'm gonna expand even more into that.
Yeah, I like the word voracious in that, because I often hear like the phrase like stay hungry. And so voracious though has a different sort of texture in it. You're like, okay, I'm real hungry. I gotta sink my teeth into something here. Oh, and being 48, I love that. So I turned 40 this past year, and I love being 40. And you're like going towards the end of like you're at the end of 40. So like, yeah, I love this.
The four when I turned 40, it was really when I started feeling comfortable inside of myself. Like I really felt different in my 40s. And I was already early in my 40s, I was like, oh, I can't wait until I'm 50. And it's an interesting transition. I mean, about to be 48, and it is when things are really starting to change physically, in a way that I can palpate, and proprioception so differently than when I was 40. It's different. And so I feel very grateful to be excited and curious about it, like not trying to stop it, but just getting curious about, oh, okay, this is what is happening to my face. This is what's happening to my body. This is what's happening to my joints. This is, and just starting to, I don't know, it's like I almost feel more alive in the aging process. Does that make sense?
That's
Making it because we're
really
so
beautiful.
afraid of death. We're so afraid of death. And that's my next journey, really, is into death doula work. But we're taught to run from it, to avoid it at all costs. But once you can fully embrace that we are this part of nature, right? The leaves fall, that all of that, the evolution of our beingness, that the more I get facility with the feeling of my impermanence, the it's almost like more exciting in a way.
There's a book of poetry that I have, and I think I have read the introduction to it more times than I've read any of the poems in it. I definitely have not read the whole book. But it is about impermanence, right? And I think it very much kind of stems sometimes from like a Buddhist kind of perspective of like what does it look like to meditate on your death daily? And to be like knowing, and the phrase in the introduction is knowing that everything changes everything. And I was like, oh, that's so simple. That's so simply said, but like that's it. And I think you're absolutely right that for me too, if we were to look at, if you're turning 48, and so like 8 years ago, you turned 40. If I were to zoom myself back 8 years, like the immense amount of change in my life in the past 8 years is kind of a lot. Mm-hmm. And to say, well, everything changes actually. Like, and right now, today, like, right. And if right now, today, like, things are shitty, great. Okay, it's going to change. If it's like, yeah. And then also, it's like, if right now feels amazing, it's also going to change. And that doesn't mean I have to, like, be sad about it. It's like, oh, I'm going to live it up then. Because, like, who knows? Who knows what the mood is going to be tomorrow morning when I wake up, or what's going to be happening in the world, or et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So. Yeah, hence that call to be present. To be fully immersed in what is right now, because it is going to change. So how do you drink, you know, the marrow out of all of it? And it's so easy not to, because there's so much distraction and busyness and kids parenting and, you know, it's very easy to not be present.
Okay. So you have two kids, they're 10 and 12. And how do you talk to them about your work?
It happens in stages, you know. They have always been around it. They were born into a house that had a pole in it. And so they have climbed the pole their whole lives. And I never hid any of my movement. I would move and do my sensual practice in front of them. And it was all very, I would say, normal, you know, because it was just what they were raised around. It didn't really start to come in as questions until they started having friends that were like, there's a pole in your house. Or my daughter had an assignment in middle school where she had to create the map of her house, and she included the pole room. And her friends were like, what do you mean a pole room? And she's like, you know, the pole room. And someone said, oh, is your mom a stripper? And she said, no. And then she came home and she was like, what is a stripper? I don't know if you are, like, but I don't think you are. And we had this whole conversation around, again, and we had had conversations previously around mom teaches sensuality, and they knew me also as a yoga teacher, because I was a yoga teacher for 25, 30 years. So they also had all these different pieces to it. I think, you know, children ask questions based on wherever they are. And so you give them the information based on where they are. And I've always been very matter of fact. And it's very difficult to talk about what sensuality is to adults. It's the same with children. It's not very easy to be able to delineate between what sensuality, what sexuality, what are all the different phrases of it. I just want to say this, that I don't demean stripping in any way. Like, the fact that she said that I wasn't a stripper was fine with me, but I also wanted to give context to her about that has a place in this world, and this is what it means, and, you know, and all of that. And also being able to say that's not what I do, and this is what I do. Did that answer all of it?
Yeah, absolutely. I just think it's fascinating, because having kids and the conversations around body and movement and poles and sex and sensuality, like, it's kind of ongoing, because they're trying to figure out their world. And so knowing you have two, like, younger ish kids, like, that, I just think it's fascinating as a parent myself, like, how they're navigating and what questions they have.
It's probably my most exciting thing about parenting, the thing that I was so excited to change the narrative that I grew up with, because I come from a very cold, closed off family, sensually, intimately, like, that was just none of that in any way. Yeah. And I was so excited to know that as a parent, that I knew that I was going to change that patterning. Mm. And so the second we got to talk about sex, I was like, oh, let's talk about it. And I was so excited to normalize it, you know, and we did it very early on. I mean, I've always, and, you know, I also study anatomy, and I do cadaver labs, and I would study my cadaver labs on a huge projector screen. And so they would see all of these forms. Very early on, and they would ask questions, and they, and so they learned about anatomy, from that standpoint very early on too. And I just loved that.
I love this so much because I the same. Like I grew up in as Mormon, kind of very. That's a whole culture of not exploration.
I
And
dated a Mormon.
oh, there we go. So, I mean, that was he was probably like he, she, they. Well, probably he. He probably was like, well, you got to get baptized if we're gonna do something.
He's an Argentinian Italian Mormon, and I it was seemed it was very confusing. I was very confused by the whole package, but yeah, it was interesting. It was
Did you have
interesting.
sex?
We did one time, and I was so con it took so long to get to that point. Like we would hang out for, and I was like, "Why won't he kiss me? Like, what is happening here?" And a lot of my inherent turn on is if someone else isn't interested in me, it gets me interested, and that was part of like a healing thing that I had to go through. Like that was not healthy, but I became more and more interested because he just wasn't acting on anything but would just hang out all the time and come over for all night long and drink wine and smoke cigars together. And I was like, what's even happening? I don't know what's happening.
So interesting. I mean, like, there's several things here, like wine, cigars, and sex, and being Mormon don't really all go together. But
Exactly.
it also depends. Like, I think there's, I mean, I don't know that I really want to talk about Mormon culture. I mean, but it is like a whole thing of when people are later converts to the church, and there's a different approach to the religion if you weren't like born and raised in it too. So there's like I have found that there's different belief patterns. And maybe that's like for a lot of religions where you're like, sure, I'll just like, I can take these parts that I like and these parts I actually don't have to take. There's a little bit more of like, I feel like people can pick and choose and have a little bit more wiggle room. Where like, as like somebody who grew up in it, that I was like, no, you don't do that. Yeah, interesting. You're like, well, that was one time. Too much work. Next. Like, you're too confusing. Fair, fair. Oh, yeah. So I grew up Mormon, but it's the same, I think, with my kids. So to go back to kids, that I'm like, I'm here to just meet them wherever it is. And I think it happened so gradually. I don't feel like there was ever a moment where I was like, I am going to like say all the things, or I'm going to. It just, we grow with our kids. Like I had my first kid when I was 22. I was still a baby. And so as I'm learning about myself and about the world, it just like was my own evolution next to my kids' evolution. And so then I agreed with you where I'm like, if they ask a question, I'm going to answer that. And then we'll just keep going and see what else they have. And I think it's, having so many friends, it's who maybe feel like it's hard to have conversations with their kids. I think it's actually because it's hard for them. And you really, as a parent, as the adult, have to be like, oh, what do I think about sex and body and sensuality and poles? And like, you have to reckon that with yourself and then like try to meet your kids. Your kids might force you to have to reckon with it, which I think is the power of children too. 'Cause they're like, so what about this, mom? Like, what's happening?
I think I'm also overly eager to talk to my kids about it, and so sometimes they're like, okay, mom, like we got it. Yeah, for sure. I never would have been able to have those conversations if I in the way that I do if I didn't do the work that I do, for sure. It's taken me a long time to arrive to where I am. And for me, the biggest conversation is really around pleasure and I wanted to take out the fear around sex. And I wanted to have these conversations around this is about feeling good in your body and learning what that means for you. And you have to figure out for yourself, what that is before you can even know how to have that conversation with someone else. And Yeah, I was just always so afraid of it, that that was the most important thing to me, that I wanted them to feel like this is a good thing. Like this
You were
is
afraid of
I
what?
was afraid of sex. I was afraid of intimacy. I was afraid of my body, like feeling it felt always felt like I was taught that it was basically a taking, that I was being taken from, right?
Well, that's a
And I was,
phrase. Like they took, like there, that is a phrase that is used.
yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's so many directions to go here, so
Yeah, no,
where do you want to go?
I'm like, I'm right here. I'm like, let's dive in. I mean, if that is where you've come from, like set the kids down, set all the things down, like where you and your journey, if you were in this afraid space, like where was a piece that changed that? Or did you have to go a little bit deeper first before you like found a different direction?
I would say that I was always really curious about, and let me just for a moment separate sensuality and sexuality, because what I teach and what I do isn't about sex. Sensuality is really my working definition, I would say, is around our internal and external experience of our world in present time. And I'm working in the narrative around allowing pleasure to come in. I mean, we can go more into that, but I just wanted to differentiate between what my sexual experience is versus sensuality. And I was curious. I had friends growing up who were very sexually active, and I just kind of watched them, not watch them have sex, but watch them talk about it and explore about it. And I was always like, just like nodding my head, you know, I have no experience. I wasn't really sexually active until I was like 18. That was very late for me. I wanted to be, and I wanted to want to. It was almost like I wanted to, but I was so afraid of it. And I didn't know anything about it other than what I had heard from my friends, and they were like saying that they were really into it and really enjoying it. And I'm like, okay. And when I started in yoga, I was first introduced to yoga when I was 7, 8 years old. I used to be a competitive gymnast. I was introduced to yoga and meditation because my best friend was a hippie, Willow Wonder, and I did everything that I could to hang out at her house. And her mom was teaching yoga and doing meditation and would take me to chants and all of that. And it was the beginning of opening up to spirituality and seeing people be really intimate, because everyone was like hugging each other and like loving on one another, petting each other almost, you know, but it felt very safe and loving. And that was the first introduction of like, oh, there's something else other than what I'm in experiment living in my home. And I was a forest yoga teacher with Anna Forrest, and when I was 21, I think. And that was the beginning of cracking myself open. That particular training, and Anna in specific, is so much about telling the truth about what's living inside of our body. So in any sort of forest yoga class or training, you'll have somebody, you know, sobbing in one corner, another person, you know, rubbing up against some rage, another person in their
Interesting.
pleasure and joy, you know. And it was the beginning of really having full permission to feel my feelings. And I didn't even know what all my feelings were. I couldn't, you know, they were very buried. And so that was the next layer, you know.
But
And
then you
then
facilitated it, or did you practice it both?
I became a forest teacher. So Anna Forrest, that was in Los Angeles in Santa Monica, and Anna left LA, and then Jill Miller, who's the creator of Yoga Tune Up, the role model method, she took over for Anna. And then I was practicing with Jill, and then Jill decided to leave, and then I took over for Jill. And then Jill went on to create her programs, and then I came with Jill at the beginning of hers, and then I became a yoga tune-up teacher, role model method, and that was another layer. But during Forest Yoga, Anna had pulled me out and said, you need to use your hands to start doing body work on people. I'd had a conversation about how my hands were always very clammy, cold, and she said, this is an energetic thing. So I ended up becoming a structural body worker. I had some incredible mentors, Ellen Heed, pelvic floor specialist. She was one of the first sexological body workers in the United States. Dr. Medici. I worked with these just incredible teachers who were doing such fringe work at the time. And I was just exposed to so much during that time. It was a really rich, rich environment. And I was still witnessing a lot of, I started witnessing a lot of this sensual pleasure and movement in this, in the bodywork world, because the bodywork was very unique. It was like kind of like Rolfing, along with emotionally mapping the body and tapping into sensual energy. And from the outsider, if they walked in and they saw this, you know, gathering of people, they'd be like, what the fuck is happening here? Like, is this an orgy? Like, what is going on? Because people are moaning, they're, you know, living into their cells. And yeah, so it was just like a little bit, and then a little bit, and then a little bit, and a little bit, and everything. I kept expanding my my palette, you know, for all the different ways that we can kind of explore and feel our body. And then I went through my Forest Yoga training with a dear friend of mine, Rie Katagiri, who was who jumped into the sensual pole world, and she was like, "I think you should come with me." And I was like, "No, I don't think so." And she's like, "I think you should." And I eventually did. And I was like, oh, got it. And it, the second I got into that space, I didn't even know really what was happening, other than I knew that it felt really fun and really, it's really easy to get burnt out on whatever your physical practice is. I think that's easy. And I like nuance, and I used to do aerial work, and, you know, I like to play, I'm kinesthetic. I like to play with my body. So it was cool to have this new thing to kind of play with. But it was like, you know, all the lights are down. There's red lights. There's really loud music to kind of drown out the mental noise that might get in the way. And then facilitated by some really incredible teachers. And it took me, I was in that world really for like, I would say maybe 10 years before I was willing to actually teach it. And I kept getting asked, will you teach? And I was like, I don't want to, because I already teach. I teach all these things. And this is like my church. This is for me, where I just want to come, and I don't, you know. And I started, and that evolution continues to happen. So even though I've been in that world for almost 20 years, it's constantly changing, because I'm constantly changing too. So it's so exciting because it keeps changing. But after about 10 years, I was walking around and I just kept seeing women so disconnected from their sensuality that I just felt like I have to teach this, because people would hire me to come and work with their chronic pain. I work with fascial adhesions and scar tissue and repetitive stress injuries and all of that. And when I was working with women, I'm like, yeah, but what you really want, what you really want is this sensual work. And I would just start to like slip it in there and not really talk about what we were doing, but I would just start to move it into the practice. And then as I became more and more comfortable with it, and then I started doing trainings and, you know, all of that, it just kind of took over that I just felt like this is the most important work that I could possibly do. And that was how I that's how I arrived there.
Wow. Wow. So interesting. You know, I think there's so many times we're like, I don't know where I'm going or what I'm going to do. And we look backwards, we're like, oh yeah, that's exactly how I got to this place. Right. And I think this sense of openness, and we're like, I just keep expanding. Like, what is it now? Like, what is it now? And like one more piece drops in to like give you another option for a wiggle open to somewhere else. And hearing how you were a yoga teacher for so long and in this, and just like a facilitator in the movement world, and knowing my own journey of yoga, I always loved watching dancers. I loved watching dancers because they don't look like they're afraid of their bodies, and they don't. And it's a totally different story when you actually know the dancing world of like the, all the feels that come with a body, because they're just normal humans. But to watch people perform and the grace and the strength that their body can move, that they let their body be seen. I think that's such a piece of it, is they are seen by somebody else, and they're letting their body tell a story, and that it's strong, and there's so much control that it's graceful. And I think it's like all of those pieces together that scared me. And I was like, that's what I want. I was like, I want that. And watching dancers and being like, they're so fucking beautiful. And how do I, like, I want that for my body and for my brain and for my heart to be able to like, be like, you could watch me and I could be in some sort of dance. And so, and it's similar in your story where I'm like, yoga played a very significant piece for me because it offers enough structure, maybe not forest yoga as much as some other types of yoga, but it offers quite a bit of structure. And I think about form and flow often. I use these words within my teaching and working with teachers as well. It's like we have to hold a bit of form in the practice. And so if, you know, the poses could be considered form, but then how do we move between them? That's your flow. Like that's where you get to personalize. That's your voice. That's your, like, all the things. And I found dance in my body because yoga gave me, like, I truly believe that it gave me enough structure that I had to do weird shit with my body. Cause yoga, you're doing weird shit with your body and you don't even know that you're going to do that. But I think all the time, like, if anybody doesn't even know what the word yoga is and they were to look in a room of people doing yoga, they'd be like, what are they doing? We're playing like Twister, right? We're like, what is happening in there? And so I think it gave me the opening to say, like, you can move your body. And I found yoga and Instagram pretty much at the same time. And so sharing it on Instagram became something I did fairly quickly. And so then I was also seen, and like looking now, I can like draw these lines, which is interesting as well. So I was sharing it, I was connecting with people, and I was finding enough of a practice that gave me structure, but ultimately has led me to my own sensuality. And yoga is 100% part of that journey. It's not all the journey, of course, but it's part of the journey. And it's so interesting because people now will like watch my videos and they're like, oh, this is a yoga dance, or like, I just want to watch you. And I'm like, and I can receive that. And it's fun to me to make it to have to be a container of like, I'm going to use the mat, but I'm going to use it in a different way and to like innovate on that. So it's like been fascinating as my own journey to observe also that embodiment and yoga as a piece of the structure that gave you, you're like, wait a second, there's something here that I can tap into, and the way that it created bigger spaces. So it's really cool.
Yeah. I think that scaffolding is so valuable, you know, and that's the same thing, you know, when I teach the work that I do, I have to create a scaffolding because it's so new. If I just put throw women in and turn on music, I'm like, go. They're like, what? Right. You know?
Yeah.
And so I have to, there's a language, a physical language that I have to teach them. But my whole job is to teach them and then tell them to forget it and let it go. Once they become familiar with like, oh, I have the permission to be able to move in this way And then you get to lose my language and learn what your language is, because I want you to have the freedom to figure out, because your body, no one's body moves in the same way. And that's what's so beautiful about it. And you get to just forget all of my language and find your own, because now you know that you have the permission to do that.
Yeah. That is so it. And I mean, like, I know we're on Sexy Sunday podcast right now, but like, I'm like, this needs to go to the yoga world too. It's like this is so much of what I talk about with yoga teachers when they come to flow school. Cause people are like, how are you flowing? How do you sequence? How do you put these things together? And it's so fun. It's been so fun for me to like, be like, okay, make that conscious for myself. What I've been doing unconsciously, make it conscious so that I can give it to them consciously, but ultimately so they can turn it into their own unconscious version of themselves, like to forget me and then put it in them. And like, I think the gift of that is also my release, right? And in some ways as teachers, we want to work ourselves out of a job and be like, let me just hold a little bit of a permission place for you. And like the gift of these people who come and work with you, Tiffany, of like, you're like, here's some space. Here's some things we're going to do. And they're like, okay. I'm just going to follow what you do. Like, it's not my choice if I'm doing the things, until they start to be like, feel into themselves and build a trust with themselves, and then there they are.
Yeah, that trust takes a while. Some are ready to go, you know, I mean, if they come in and they've already been embodied, you know, and they're just ready to kind of to dive into it, but most often it really takes time. And there's such a huge piece around whether I'm working privately with someone or I'm working in a group, because there's this whole other dynamic around the sister wound, you know, and all of the judgment that women have also played into on other women. And so when the women are in the space together, starting to learn how to support each other and mirror one another, and it's so co-created, right? It's so much of that is healing this, you know, we're going to get burned at the stake, you know, if we move in this way, and she's going to think that I'm too audacious, or she's going to think that I'm all full of myself, you know. And when we're able to move in a group setting with one another, and you can see the reflection of yourself and everyone else too, right? Like, women start to see, like, how could I ever think that I wasn't gorgeous in whatever iteration that I was in, because it's every shape, every age, every size, all of it, you know, in one space. And then witnessing how beautiful somebody's grief is, how beautiful somebody's rage is, you know, and the more that we normalize that, then the more trust we have inside of our own selves, you know, and we go like, oh, I can, my body can explore this piece, you know, but it's also all, you know, it's a co-regulated state. So much of the work is really about the nervous system, and that happens in co-regulation, being around other people, being able to hold it and say, yeah, go there. It's okay. You know?
How did this, I mean, this was kind of like a list. You kind of shared how your journey of yoga and like the learning of people you did and the facilitators, but that's like also the work side slash, you know, like it is your church and finding like the church of things, like where I'm like, this podcast is my church. This is like funsies. Like, and I'm going to talk about whatever we want. I'm like, I can already feel, I'm like, we need to have an 8-hour long podcast together.
I'm down.
But there's a lot
costume
of
costume changes.
Absolutely. Yeah. But there's a lot of personal life happening in this same space. And there's a lot of your own personal experiences. So being in a facilitated room, whether you're being the facilitator or you're participating, that is one thing. But then you're going out to relationships. And how did this kind of growing expansion of what your sensuality was then affect your sexuality and the way you showed up in intimacy?
Yeah. Oh, this is so good. I'm so excited to talk about this. Okay, so yeah, I was totally frozen. My first like real sexual experience was on prom night. It was like so fucking stereotypical. It was a guy, it was like the first boyfriend I had really ever had, and he had a condom that was hidden under the pillow, you know, and like pulls it out, and I was like, oh man. And I was so terrified. I was so terrified, and it didn't even really work. You know, it was like he got entered me like halfway, and I was like, oh no, we're not doing this. No. And
Yeah.
I also think my nervous system is also, I had a highly developed awareness of my yes and no very early on. And even my nervous system knew that this is not the person that I really want to do this with. But I was also like, but I'm ready. And I like want, I also want to, but you're not the one, you know?
But he
So
got
I
in
think,
halfway, and then you like were like, nope, get off, like we're done.
yeah,
Okay.
yep. Yeah, that was it.
And he was
That was
like,
it.
okay.
Yeah, and then he cheated on me, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It was such a very, very slow process. And I went through, you know, I after that I had my first real love in college, and I couldn't communicate at anything. I was so very afraid to communicate about how I was feeling or what sex meant to me or anything. So it was all. And he wasn't talking to me about it either, and I think waiting for me to open. And but we started, you know, physically experimenting, and then during that time, I was sexually assaulted, and so everything kind of shut down and went more internal, and not by him, but it really. It's like I was just starting to come out of my shell, and then I like went back in. And so all of my relationships from that point, I had a long-term relationship for 5 and a half, 6 years with someone that I loved very much, and we were sexual, and he was very very sexual. And I was still very shut down, but I would have sex, but it wasn't, I wasn't really enjoying myself because I didn't know how to, you know?
So when you're,
And
can we pause there for a minute? So in this, like you love him, he's very sexual, you're having sex. What did having sex, what does that mean? What does that mean in this time?
it meant
I mean,
like, it
because
was
sex looks
almost,
like so many different things with the experience of that. So just like, yeah, more so.
It was almost like a lot of the time I would see myself third person, and it would be like, look, you're doing it. Look, you're doing, you can do it. You're doing it, you know? And every once in a while I would get out of my head and into my body. You know, I could have an orgasm. I could enjoy myself. And then once I would have sex, I would feel very open and available and relaxed. And, much more available to even the idea of having it again sooner. The longer I would go without it, the more closed off and shut down I would become. And then it would be like a whole nother like rigmarole to try to get myself to a place of being able to, because I hadn't yet learned how to arrive inside of my own pleasure, inside of my own eros. I had no relationship to, oh, I actually get to, I actually, this is a part of me, right? This is actually something that I was born with, right? I just learned to shut it off and disconnect from it. So I thought for a very long time I was broken. It just felt like I'm just not a sexual, sensual person. I want to hang out, but I just believed that I really wasn't that girl. And then I would start to have feelings of like we broke up, that long-term relationship. And I was like, oh no, I started feeling cravings of wanting it. And then I was like, oh, there is something there. Okay. I do, I am alive somewhere inside of myself. And then when the sensual movement came in, I started feeling good in my body, but I was still it didn't cross over into my sex life in any way. It was like very, like, this is for me and for me alone. And I'm just going to play in this space and I'm going to feel all juicy and good in this space. And then I'm going to go out into the world and I'm going to feel good, but don't touch me. Please yeah. don't touch me. I could be intimate with all of my friends in a really loving, beautiful way, but I couldn't be physically intimate with a partner in a real loving and open. And then I met my husband, who was also, who is probably the most sexual human being I've ever come across. He's a Scorpio artist. And
he's like, hi.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Yeah. And he assumed that I was very sexual and sensual because I was comfortable in my body. I've always been comfortable because physically I was very strong and I was a gymnast and I was a yoga teacher and I was doing, you know, I was doing all these things with my body. And I would be in public spaces and, like, you know, on an airplane, I put my feet up on the roof of the airplane all the time. You know, I'm like, I move my legs around. And I would be, we met in this spoken word scene in Los Angeles, and it's all a bunch of beatnik, you know, poets and artists and musicians and movers. And, you know, I would stretch in public because I don't give a shit because it feels good to me and I want to. But to him, he thought, ooh, there's the one, you know. And then he realized, like, oh, I'm actually not all that. In the very beginning of a relationship, I was very open because I was willing to experiment. And it was easy to almost not be the identified with who I thought I was in the very beginning of a relationship. So I allowed myself to kind of experiment and play. And then he thought that that was my norm and it really wasn't. And then after like 3 months, I started to kind of go back into my more frozen state. And
that must have been hard for both of you.
Yeah. What was so beautiful and is so beautiful about my husband, one of the things is that he is a very... he can see a lot that other people are not necessarily seeing. And he understood that I was a sensual creature and that I just wasn't connecting to it. And he's like, I don't, like, it's all right there. Like, it is right there on the surface. Why, where, how come you can't connect to it, you know? So he trusted that and believed in that. And I was also, you know, luckily I was very immersed in the sensual world, but it took, I would say it took, about 10 years. We've been married for, I think 16. I think it took about 10 years until maybe it's not quite 10. It just feels like that. I don't know. But until I really started owning my sensuality and owning my relationship in it. And that happened through what I would call bed dancing. So I started taking the sensual work that I did in my classes into the bedroom where I would just be in the bed and I would say, don't touch me. Just be here and wait. And I have an incredibly patient husband. Thank God. And it was no, like, it's not like it's not pleasurable for him to witness, you know, to watch me embody myself. And so that's what's so beautiful is that one, he also is visual and he's an artist and everything is beautiful to him. But it was delicious for him to be able to witness. But I learned, because I didn't know early on that women really connect to their eros through their bodies first. Men, it's through their mind into their bodies, and women, it's through their bodies and into their mind. And so I developed this practice of getting into my body sensually, and then my mind would go, okay, here I am. Now I've arrived. So it started with just dancing, moving, being in the bed, in the sheets and with music. And then I would open. And then over time I needed that less and less. And not that need is a bad thing. I mean, it's like, I'm all for bed dancing, like, go and practice and experiment. And especially if, you have a hard time going from A to, you know, like transitioning, you know, from the day into being intimate with your partner. It's a, such a beautiful way of being able to do it. But then once I cracked that code, it started opening up more and more and more things. And then I got to dance for him, which is both of our like favorite things to do. And that's a whole nother thing that's different from what's happening in my classes, you know, versus me dancing for my husband. It's a very different thing. But it is that crossover between sensuality and sexuality. It was merging those two, you know, in an intimate relationship with my husband.
Yeah. And when you're talking about how you're dancing for your husband, are you talking about not the bed dancing, but other dancing?
Oh, or yeah. Other. I mean, with the pole in my studio, in, you know, wherever it could be, wherever. But yeah, not just limited to the bed. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Taking it to the walls, taking it to the wherever. Yeah.
You're like walls, the dresser.
Yeah.
You're dang yeah, it. You're
everything's like, fair game. Yeah.
You're like, you want me to dance up your body? Fantastic.
Yeah.
Sit right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that took time too to develop this comfort level with being able to make contact while I was dancing, because my dancing for him was first far away. You can see me like across the room or, you know, but I'm not going to come that close to you because that's incredibly vulnerable, you know, and then you can like see what, maybe you'll see what I'm thinking if I'm scared or what, you know, whatever it is. It took a while. It's like just bit by bit by bit. And because he created a space of such full permission for me, he was like, whatever you're going to do, I am here for it. You know, it can be messy. It can be, you know. He was so beautiful, is so beautiful at being able to appreciate all of it for all of what it is, no matter how it comes out.
Yeah. Via text message, when we were texting, I asked you if you'd been divorced and you said, no, but I could have been. How does that text fit in line with this?
Yeah. Well, one, I would say marriage is such a strange concept, you know, to stay with someone for such an extended period of time and two people who come from two totally different backgrounds. And we come typically without skills in learning how to actually be in long-term or intimate relationships. And God, I mean, communication is just foreign. You know, how do we actually learn how to talk to one another? So it was hard. Our marriage was very hard for a long time. Coupled with, we also have, our daughter has a lot of behavioral, mental health challenges. That in and of itself could have easily thrown us into separation because it's been a lot to hold. And she was also a crucial piece of us staying together, honestly. And that's, I mean, there's so much more there, but we had a very long journey of what it felt like survival. And when we moved from Los Angeles to Portland, Oregon, where we were for 4 years, Portland became this place of like facing all of our shadows. It was like every and all things that we had buried, tried to avoid, all of it rose to the surface and kind of caught on fire. And it was COVID. And then we lost our house and we moved into this tiny apartment where we're now like on top of each other, emotionally, physically, so stressed out because financially we were so stressed. It had just gotten to the point where we were going, basically going to divorce. And I took the kids to Wisconsin. for a few months to get some space. And in that time, we were also in therapy with a somatic therapist that if he was the reason why we moved to Portland, Oregon, that would have been worth it in and of itself was meeting him. He's so incredible, so incredible. And I was working with him individually, and then we started working together as a couple. And in this space between where I'm in Wisconsin and my husband, Michael, was in Oregon, and we're doing joint therapy virtually. And I'm also doing all of this, my own work away from him physically, and really starting to come to terms with my rage and all these different pieces that I had swallowed during our marriage. And he was doing the same in his own way. And we were able to work through all of the pieces of pain that we had endured and created for one and co-created with one another, and choose a different path forward. And I'm amazed that I'm married to the same person and we have a different marriage. That we can be married for such a long time and then we changed it. And the thing that I knew early on with my husband was that I knew he would be willing to do the work if the work came. And I knew that we were going to have to do work. I knew that. I didn't know what it was going to look like, but I knew that at some point it would be there. And he was willing to do it. And it was hard as hell. He came up with the idea. I don't know if you know Harville Hendricks, Getting the Love You Want. It's such a good book. Such a good book. But he, in his book, he talks about, I forgot what it's called now. It's not conscious dialoguing. I can't remember the term, but Micah came up with this brilliant idea of, you know, let's do this dialoguing every day for a month or 2 months. And it's basically like reflective, you know, you hold the space for your partner. They get to say whatever it is that they want to say. And then you need to mirror it back and you need to validate it. And then you move on. Right. And we took turns every other day, who was going to go first. It was the hardest fucking thing I've ever done. I was so pissed off so many times. He was much more generous in his ability to validate, because what happens is your partner is saying whatever they're saying and you're like, that's bullshit. You know, like, no way that I didn't do that, or that's not true, or whatever you might feel about it. Right. But you have to validate them and you have to hold the space, and their experience is their experience. And so I had to be able to see it from his perspective in a much deeper way and hold the space. And there were times where I would be like, I need a day. I hear you. I need a minute and I got to sit with this because I'm not ready to validate. I can't see it yet, you know? And then as we were able to validate for one another, there was so much healing that occurred, and we really saw one another. And then we could really understand why each of us would respond the certain ways that we did when we would get triggered, you know? And there was just such I'm so proud of our willingness to do it. And it would have been so easy to say, this is too much. It's too much. It shouldn't be this hard. And I would hope it's not that hard for everybody. And there's so many different kinds of relationships, you know. But I am on my knees in gratitude for having a partner who was willing to do that work, because no matter where we go from here, because it doesn't mean we don't stand in this place of, or I don't at least, of this is 100% forever for the rest of our lives. That's not where I stand. I just stand in the gratitude that my nervous system has sewn itself up that I can have a healthy relationship. It just would have been so many times it would have been so much easier to just walk away. But then we also had these two children. We had, you know, what was interesting was our relationship when we were thinking about divorce was bracketing the ages that we both were when our parents got divorced. And our therapist had said, you know, you guys don't even know what it's like to be in a home of unit, you know, beyond the age of 7 or 8 years old, because you guys never experienced that. And it was really, we have very many parallels in our childhood lives, in that. And so, yeah, it was interesting. It was very, very interesting, but it's so exciting to have known him for such a long time and to have so many different stages in the marriage and to see where we are now and how we enjoy each other and how we play with each other. And there's so much more to come. And I know that. And that's what's exciting too. It's like there's just so much more.
Yeah. Well, you've built such a container of trust. Mm. I mean, if we were to speak of like self, right? Like, and I tell this actually to folks I work with, I'm like, thank you for, you know, for as a group, like trusting this group of people, because we're here individually, but also as a group. And thank you for trusting me as a teacher. And mostly like for trusting yourself to like hold yourself here. And ultimately it's like you and you, in whatever situation it is. And so like, that's such a big deal to create your own personal nervous system, like embodiment kind of experience, but then to say, I'm going to sit with this person and I can show up in all of the versions of me and be met and be seen. And the play that then is possible because of that trust is so big.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's still expanding because there are still places inside of me that I'm afraid to go. Mm. So it's still, yeah, it's so interesting. You know, so I think a lot of people assume with my work that I am just like free bird, you know, like any and all things sexual, or, you know, and I'm not that. I'm actually quite shy in a lot of, in many, many ways. And I still continue to learn. I mean, where I am now in my own embodiment practice is light years beyond where I thought I would ever be. Mm. And I would say, you know, one of the hardest places for me is verbalization, like being able to really use my voice. And I work with like howling and, you know, all kinds of things like that, but it's still terrifying. I still have this insidious shame around using my voice. And so I know that I have a safe container to play in. And that is really exciting. But I'm not one to be pushed. So I'm only going to come out when I am ready.
Oh, yeah. No, I like for so long, I'm like, don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And no surprise, I also have children, like one of mine very much in particular, when they were very little, like I got like this note card that's like, hi, mom. And like, I open up this little like letter from like, you know, my second grader or something like that. They're like, I really don't like it. Like it says, I just want to be free inside and I don't want to be told what to do. And I'm like, and there wasn't even a particular circumstance or anything. This child is very much that child. I fucking love it so much. I'm like, there's sometimes that it's hard to parent, but
yeah.
Excellent skills moving out. Cause I'm like, I get it. Like, don't tell me what to do. I'm going to like figure it out. If I feel pressure, then I feel like I'm under a lens and it makes me want to get smaller and not involve you. So then I'm going to separate myself more. So just give me a second.
Yeah. And if parenting isn't just the biggest lens that there is around wherever it is that we're standing, you know, That's so beautiful that they felt comfortable enough to say that and that they knew that about themselves, you know. That's so great.
Yeah. But thank you for sharing like this whole story. I just like want to hold it here for a second. Like the gift to have met somebody who was willing to be in this mirror practice with you and to see himself as much as he is willing to see you, and the work it really is in partnership, and how we could try to learn as much as we could about communication, but it's really once you get in it, like you can't really learn it until it's there in your face and you're like, oh, I need to learn this. And then you either choose to or to not to, and be like, okay, where do we learn from? Because before this moment, I didn't really need to. Like, it would have been helpful. I could have, you know. But like, now this is what we do. And to have somebody, and you know, if we're talking about like intimacy with ourselves, intimacy with others, I think that's so much of I love these conversations, because it is. It's like the peripheral story. It's like the things that are very visible that maybe we can see. But then it like all of this. I think that I'm most interested in is building a life. How do we each personalize and build a life where we have a voice, and where we have the freedom to move and to really embrace that we're more than one thing? And at one moment you can be like, oh, I'm doing great, and also over here I'm not doing as great, and we can be both. And that it's normal, and that we can say the things. And I think that when we say the things, we free ourselves, and we free others by saying them too.
Yeah, absolutely. And same thing with, I mean, it's exactly the same thing with your sensuality, with your eros, you know. It's like,
Exactly.
if you, yeah, it's just, how do you ever inhabit a body that has never been accepted? And if you keep compartmentalizing that only these bits get to exist, how do you ever get to really enjoy these other places, you know, without demonizing them, hiding them, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's keep leaning in there, because I mean, I love the conversation of voice, and I'm like, we could nerd out there, but I think there's other places we can go as well. Just how you're saying that you're facing a lot of shame in how you want to use your voice, which again is so interesting, right? Because if somebody were to find you on social media and be like, oh, this person is talking about all these things, and is and how the again, there's more than one story always happening at the same time. And so if you have a howling practice, like, can you just give a little bit more definition? So if somebody's like, what the fuck? What does that mean? Let's start there, and then let's like wiggle into like voice and shame.
We just started howling. Yeah, I mean, it's primordial, you know. I mean, it's just connecting to the animal. So being in the woods and just starting to howl, or being in, it's very wolf-like. And it's finding, yeah, it's just finding the animal voice within and allowing her the ability to speak. So it's, you know, I mean, you make sounds when you're orgasming, you make sounds when you're birthing, if you give birth, or if you know, and if you're birthing anything, you celebrate, you know, or you howl in grief, or, you know, but it's allowing it to not be actual words. And instead, it's a feeling, it's a guttural, where it's, where am I voicing this from? Is it coming from my heart? Is it coming from my belly? Is it coming from my pelvis? Is it, where is it living inside of me? So starting to build this relationship to not needing words, but allowing the sound to just be in the space and for it to be received. And
Oh, okay. There's a couple of things. Like, one, I have, and I love so much how yoga does give some framework. So I'm going to take it back to yoga. I have a friend who, whenever she's like, come to my class, she is moaning the whole time. I love it so much, but it's like, I'm like, this is amazing. Like, this is her in her body. And also, because I make so much video of myself, if there's not sound over it, or if I have my AirPods in and then I watch it back, and like, I am humming and sighing and like, there's like all different sorts of noises. And so I think it's interesting in the yoga room, if it's very quiet, or, but like, we're like moving your body. And so to create, I think, this space again, like, I'm a weird yoga teacher. I'm like, not like your typical teacher, but the same for you. Right. But I'm like, okay, how do we like give yourself permission to like feel, like make the noise that you make when this, when a stretch feels good, and when this movement feels good. So I think that's interesting. And even the exploration that people can have in regular living times, when like food is really good, even when you're at a restaurant, I think about like, I love my drippy eggs so much. And like, I make all the noise when I eat my drippy eggs. But I'm like, in a restaurant, we're eating at a restaurant. I'm like, like, let's do like the closed eyes, like salivating, like slumpy shoulders sort of pause when something is like so fucking good.
Yeah. My husband's always amazed at how quickly I take in pleasure from food. He's like, how do you know so quickly that it's good? And I'm like, I know immediately.
Yeah. And then I would love to share with you, just because I mean, it's not something that is, so because you've said this, I'm like, oh, this is so fun. The howling in the woods. I, at different times in my life, I've gone out in the woods, and then I will yell. And I even just think recently where I, well, not yell is not the right word. Howling is probably better, but I haven't like thought of it as howling. It's like, I don't know, maybe that is the right word, because I am calling, like I am calling into the woods, and I will be at the ocean, on like the cliffs on the ocean, or is out at a hot springs recently, naked hot springs, and they're driving back, and my lover and I was like, wait, we have to make naked pictures. Like, I need to take off my clothes and you make some pictures for me in the woods. And so we pulled over the car, and like, there was a car that drove by. I was like, oh, the only cars on this road are from the hot springs. They've already seen me naked. I don't really care. But I'm like standing on this tree stump, looking over this gorge, just howling, just like, it's like from inside and making noises into the earth. But you know, one of the moments that like really felt, like, I would really say it was sacred in that way. I was with a different lover before this, the lover I had before, and he and I went on a hike, and there was like nobody in the area. And I started doing this. I started like having like these calls, like I was calling to the earth. And it is a moment, like so I just, for anybody who hasn't done this, like you've done this, but I'm like, I have experienced this, and I don't really talk to people who have experience with this that can be like, this, it makes sense. Like, and so to have you share this, but it's like from inside of you, it's like, what in your gut, like what through the torso of your body that you are like calling into the world. And I was doing this, and I noticed like he had closed his eyes and he had put his hand on his chest. As I like went on for probably the longest I probably have ever done that. And then I stopped, and then we just paused, and he opened his eyes, and he was like, that was incredible. Like the feeling of it. And so then we took turns, like then we just swapped, like we just did it once each. And so it was totally an unplanned thing. And it's not something you can laugh in. It's not something like, it was like a real thing that we're doing. And I closed my eyes. I put my hand on my heart, and he just howled into the world. And the feeling in that space and the sound of his voice in my body and that experience, like it truly was holy. in that moment.
Yeah. And therein lies the sensuality. That's it. Yeah. I mean, you know, shame and stress and trauma are the things that shut us down from feeling those things. And it's breath and movement and sound that reconnects us to being alive, to being in our eros, being in our creativity. So yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, it's powerful. Because it what's more powerful than creative force? Makes life, you know?
Yeah,
it lives in the vibration. That's why music is just everything. You know, well, music and movement to me.
Totally. When I was talking to my sister and she's like, you know, what other places or where going to live music is exactly this. I love that you gave this lift, breath and movement and sound. You go to live music, you move your body. The speakers are loud enough that you're going home thinking you have ear damage.
Yeah.
You're singing, you can yell, and you're breathing. Like, of course live concerts have what they have. And we might not be able to, like, people haven't even named that, but it's a sensual experience.
Yeah. And it breaks you open.
Mm-hmm. And shame because there's, in a way, because everybody's there doing it.
Go ahead.
No, you can keep going. I was gonna look, we can tap into shame more, a little bit more here with like scene. And that's actually, I want to go there. Like,
yeah.
Because even going to like the story of your husband seeing you bed dance and you being willing to being seen, and where if we go to a concert, we kind of get lost in the crowd. We don't get seen, which is, I think, part of the comfort of it. Like, I can go and be loud and messy and like move my body in weird ways and it's dark and like cool. But to show up and be seen by somebody, and the way that that can shut us down, and how do we tap into our sensuality and being willing to see ourselves even just in those moments. Like, let's talk about shame plus pleasure and being able to see ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it, is that we don't fully come out of the shame until we're witnessed. So the greatest gift is having someone to be able to witness you in your trepidation, in your most vulnerable place. And I don't know what is much more vulnerable, especially for women, because we've been taught to shut down completely from our sensuality. For protection, I mean, for so many different reasons, because it's so powerful, to try to protect us so we wouldn't get hurt, there's just so much there. And so when we start to explore that space, and there's so much here. Okay, let me just take a moment.
Where we have space.
There's so much, when we are given permission to feel pleasure in our body through the breath and the movement and the sound, and allowing it to just take us, you know, like the wind, like the ocean waves, that it just move us around the room, feeling different textures, you know, just really allowing it to affect moment to moment. What happens is the body will start to open. And then intuitively, the body will snap shut, because our nervous system goes, don't do that. Don't do that. You have to cross your legs. You can't be that open. You can't be that audacious. You can't be that permissive, because you're going to get in trouble if you do. And in those places are the rage, the fear, the grief. And they're so deeply buried in our crevices that we don't even know that they're there to the degree that they are. And so when we start to dance this line between opening and then giving the permission to also close. You are allowed to close. You're not in the space to like crack all the way open, you know, when it's not too much, too soon, too fast, right? It's just at the right time because the nervous system goes, okay, now I can tolerate a little bit more. It's just titration, you know, it's just because, you know, my words may elicit like, oh, okay, this something makes sense here. I can do this. And so when we open, what very often happens is then there's a wave of emotion that comes through and that you didn't even know that it was embarrassing. Like, why do I have this embarrassment? Why can't I just open my legs? Why can't I have my hands on my vulva while I listen to the song? Why can't I, you know, rub this pillow on my body or, you know, whatever it is? Yeah, I'm just seeing if there's something else there.
I think what's coming up for me is, again, this word permission. I'm also loving the word audacious in this moment. And how often it is taught that being sensual, being sexual, sensual, tapped to himself, or like expressing yourself sexually and wanting this, right? Or like having a craving, having like tapping into this like self. And there's a bigness that happens when you tap into it. And even if you have this open, closed experience, like you're feeling into yourself, how that's, it is not always celebrated. And it's something that has been shut down or told to be quiet or told to be smaller, or perhaps it was not a verbal told, but like a feeling of wherever you were coming from. And so in this way where you're saying like, well, what happens if we move and like just touch our body with our hands or lean against this wall in this way or make this sound, that it is really this permissive practice of just allowing ourselves to be. And yeah, where rather than saying, I have to correct myself, I have to correct myself, we're like, actually, let's set down all correction and even the word correct and do something different.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what if we were raised in an environment that we were allowed to be free in our bodies? What if we weren't afraid that we were going to be raped? What if we weren't afraid that we were going to be followed? What if we weren't afraid that someone wasn't going to want their children to play with your children because you're sensually embodied, you know? Mm. Yeah. I mean, there's something that you said,
I think I don't know, now I'm stuck on like the people not wanting their kids to play with your kids. I'm like, that sounds like your story. If you're saying that. Is that
no,
your story?
I don't know. I don't okay. know. I'm just, I think I'm anticipating that being my story at some point as my kids reach teenage years, you know, what I think it's more around like maybe how it's going to be for my kids, you know, when their friends come over and, you know, maybe more along my son, you know, and his friends and their, you know, what does this mean? But
well, and having my oldest, especially like that has definitely been a journey for him and I, cause he's 17 and has social media and all of his friends have social media and all of his friends have found my page. Like found Sexy Sunday and here I am like naked, you know? And so he has heard a lot of things about me from his friends. And so then it's opened up a lot of conversation for him and I about what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. So it probably will arrive.
Yeah. And I look forward to that too. I mean, that's exciting to me because it is about changing the narrative. And look, it chose me a very fringe kind of work. And I constantly stand. I'm willing. I chose to stand in a place of discomfort. It's so incredibly triggering, the work that I do for so many people. They make up so many things about it. And I mean, I just my hope, my greatest desire is to just bridge this divide for women who think that it is not an inherent part of who we are. It just is. It's a part of how we arrived in our bodies in the first place. And we women in particular have been taught to disconnect from their femininity in order to live into this patriarchal and like this feminist place. I come from feminists. Like, my grandmother lived until she was 105. She never wore anything but pants because when she was growing up, she was told that she had to wear a dress. And she was like, I don't know if you can still hear me because my ear pod's starting to go out.
I can.
Okay. She was just like, fuck this, you know, and wore pants and was very much like the rule of the roost, you know. And I was raised in a very much like you take on kind of the masculine. And so it just continued to, you know, exacerbate my disconnection from my feminine. And it's such a disservice to the entire world when women are disconnected from their erotic self, which is different from sex. It is your creative flow. It is your turn on. It is what continues to feed and nourish all of life around you, you, whatever you decide to give to, whatever you're here to create, you know? You just can't, when we stifle it, it just closes everything down. It shuts it all down.
Yeah, I have 100% experienced this, am experiencing this, right? Like this leaning into the erotic. And I was married for 16 years and divorced. And how it really was only those last, I mean, the last year and a half we were in an open marriage. And then before that, it was like just really right before that, that we really started to like tap into different spaces for with each other, but also by ourselves. And I talk to my kids, I'm like, I did not start masturbating until like, I don't know, 5 years ago. Like this wasn't even like a part of who I, like what I did. Maybe it's only 5 years now, but like it's fairly recent. It's fairly recent. And to then just be able to talk about it and to like have conversations with the kids, be like, okay, yeah, like whatever, like this is part of our lives. And it is this tapping into my sensuality. And I love how you're defining erotic as creative flow. And tapping into that in myself has 100% affected all the other places that I show up. It changes me because it brings me home to me. And I use the phrase so often, like building a home in myself, but this is such a piece of it, is like being able to look myself in the eye. I love dancing in the mirror. I love dancing with myself in the mirror. And that is a very tricky practice for a lot of people. And I've been privileged to like lead some people in that, or to work them, help work them to that space too, of being seen and just seeing themselves. And photography is a great kind of tool that can then be part of that too. But I feel you. And like this erotic self being part of the home that you get to move from out in the world. And it does change the way that you approach the world, or let the world approach you too.
Yeah, that's the perfect word. I mean, that's the same thing when I first stepped into the sensual world, where I was like, oh, this is what I've been looking for, because the whole thing was about coming home. The whole thing, the yoga, the structural body work, the cranial sacral work, all the things that I was doing, it was all to try to get into myself, into I'm okay in here, and I own this. This is mine. Right. And I exist here, and these are my boundaries, and I get to lay claim to my boundaries and to my pleasure. And it's 100% about coming home. 100%. Yeah.
I have one more question. I do want to go into it just because I know you talk about some pain. And what I mean, like, I have my own idea, so I'm just going to pose this question. Like, what do you think low back pain is really telling women?
You know, it's interesting.
I could put men in there too. Like, it just, like, low back pain in general. We can kind of say that too, but.
Yeah. You know, I it will probably be surprising, I guess, maybe what my response might be, especially after going through, like, mapping the body and, you know, all those kinds of things. But I also work in neuroplastic pain. And neuroplastic pain is chronic pain. It's anything that's beyond 3 months of someone having pain. And if you have chronic pain, it means that it's coming from your emotional state. It's coming from looping thoughts. It doesn't mean that your pain isn't real. It means that there is a nervous system response that's saying, hey, something's not right, and I need to try to protect you from it. So whether it's low back pain, whether it's chronic shoulder pain, whether it's abdominal pain, you know, whatever your chronic pain is, it's information that your nervous system is telling you that something needs to be paid attention to. We could say, you know, there's certain places in the body, like the ass has to, and neck have to do with control. You know, very often the low back is the opposite side of sex organs, you know, and so you're navigating this relationship to feeling home inside of the womb, or home in, like, feeling comfortable in your own sexuality, sensuality. Like, there can be a piece there. There's a lot of fear that's in the lumbar spine, low back. It's a self-protection mechanism. You know, we tend to grip and bear down. But your body is your body, and it's all one entity. So you can't separate necessarily. I mean, you can... I want to say you can't necessarily separate this from that, because you're like a sweater and you pull one thread and it goes all the way, you know, down towards your hip, because it's also connected to the scapula and, you know, all of that. Yeah, but there are, you know, I don't know. It's a very long-winded answer to me wanting to say, I don't know what your specific low back pain is. And I don't mean you. I just mean whomever it is, you know. Right. What I know is that there is an underlying nervous system self-protection mechanism that's coming in and saying, you need to prepare and brace, because something doesn't feel safe here. And the longer we are willing to make ourselves known in that space, to create a tenderness around taking care of these places and being with them and allowing them to exist, and I'm here to listen, you know, it's like you keep saying these things to your body, like, I'm here to listen, I'm right here with you, it's okay, I, you know, the more we learn from it. And I think it just can be unique, as we all are unique. And it's very easy to be dogmatic in certain trainings to say, like, the jaw means this, the, you know, pec means this, that, you know, and I'm not saying that there isn't truth to some of those things. There very well can be. Yeah. And there's more, because there's always more, because there's your unique life that you have lived, and whatever story you have about yourself and whatever patterning that happened for you is going to be unique to you. So you can't get away from spending the time with yourself, even if a teacher, a master teacher, instructor is saying it means this, A equals B. You have to figure out for yourself, does it? Because there might be something else there.
Yeah. Well, and I love that as an example too, because, or as like a point of, we can outsource our own work to teachers. But ultimately the teachers are just there to help us be able to figure out what the hell we are or are not missing, and then we have to do our own excavation and expansion in that space.
Yeah. So it's almost always fear. It's almost always fear in some way. You know, we're afraid of something, and so we've developed a pattern to try to control it, for that fear to not manifest, before it to stop, if it is manifesting, if it seems like it.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. I mean, again, like you did an excellent job of saying, like, well, this, and like, it's a hodgepodge of things, but I think the amount of people that do deal with chronic pain and we talk about pleasure and embodiment and wanting to get out of your body because it's in pain is like a whole thing. And so just like, and you use the word soft, like, you know, and tender, like tenderly listen to it. And I had somebody once say like, what happens if you talk to your pain? Like, just like to have this conversation with you and just like be in it. And so I think just that tenderness and, because we can be on this podcast. I mean, we can get as detailed as we want about like all the things, but ultimately like we're all here. I'm just being like, just wherever you're at. And if somebody's listening to this conversation in the future, we're just like, oh, well, I can't be like this or that, but it doesn't, I don't want anybody to be like me or have my story. And like, you're here to help others. You know, this is part of your work, is like you and your story. Like, let me just be like somebody you can hold a hand with so you don't feel alone in this. And I can share a couple tools for you to then implement in this and walk yourself into yourself so that you can walk in the world and be like, this is who I am today. And this is who I am today. So,
yeah. And I just want to add that it takes time. Mm-hmm, it takes time. And so much of what I do is create a space for the slow. Mm-hmm. And it's so difficult to be in the slow because we're constantly distracted, because our mind is noisy and loud and continuing to convince us that we have to do something in order to arrive somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. And it's in the relationship with the slow where the truth really exists. And so when you're slow with your pain, because we want to exit the body, absolutely, because we're in pain and it hurts and we don't want to feel it. But when you allow yourself to be slow and listen, you can't listen to it if you are in your head and noisy and trying to figure it out. So the sensual movement is what allows you to create the relationship to the slow. You can't really be in that embodied space until you have allowed yourself to slow down so much that you're no longer thinking about it. You're just following the impulse. You're following the pull and you're listening to the whispers, whether it's your pain, whether it's your pleasure. You're just continuing to listen a little bit more deeply. But it takes time and we have to be patient. Yeah. We have to be really, really patient.
Yeah. Following the slow. I don't know. We're slow in this. I think this is the perfect space. That's the perfect ending right here. It's like this slowing down and the listening and it is that, and it isn't a rush. And the faster we try to rush, that's like a push, like that's a force. You're like, nope, I'm going to do the time. And that there's not a rush to any event.
Yeah. Cause it's a disconnect. When you rush, you are no longer present. You're no longer in the truth. You're in the I should.
Thank you so much. Thank you for this whole conversation and for the work that you do. And the way that, I mean, anybody listening to this is going to be like, this is who I'd like to work with now. So thank you for making the space and for sharing like you have. And do you want to tell about anything that's upcoming for you that you want to invite people to or work in specific?
Sure. Well, first, thank you for creating an opportunity for people to say all the things, because you're doing that all over the map in this realm. And that's just it's so healing. It's really, really healing. So thank you so much for that. I teach virtually, I teach in person. I'm just about to launch a community. I think it's going to be a monthly, once a month class, Sliding Scale, for those who are, you know, sensual movement curious. You don't have to have your camera on. Remember that it's nice to, because it's good to be witnessed, but you don't have to. So if that's the limiting factor for you, come and turn your camera off. And then I teach workshops, and I have a workshops that I teach around the country when I can. Right now, I don't have a whole lot coming up in person outside of here locally in Raleigh. So if you're in North Carolina, you can come and see me here. I teach at retreats when they come up, and you can always find that stuff on my website, which is dancebrave.com. And you'll find me on Instagram. And I love any and all conversations. So ask me all the questions.
Well, all the stuff will be in the show notes. So everybody go say hi to Tiffany. Tell her what you loved. Tell her what feels exciting. Maybe what you're taking slow. Oh, such a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you. And maybe let's do this again soon.
Love to.
Okay, lovers. Go get your slow on. Mwah.